Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 57, July 25th, 2012. Tom, HQ Radio. Hello, everybody. It's K9EID, and it's Ham Nation time. And we'll let Joe Walsh play us out there. And for all of you that are watching live and you're wondering what we're talking about, you're going to have to go listen to the replays and hear Joe Walsh's great theme that he wrote for the show and plays every week, but it's only done on the replays. So you want to check out Joe. We're going to have an incredible show tonight. We've got a lot of things, got a lot of history, got some reports from different people. We got an incredible maker fair, just wonderful things. So I think you're going to enjoy tonight. Gordon, how are you doing in Costa Mesa?
Everything is fine. We even had our obligatory earthquake, not quite in Costa Mesa, but up the coast. All the hams got on our 40-meter net, and we were ready to pass traffic, but it was just a little 3.5, enough to knock some dishes around uptown. So everything is fine here, Bob. Back to you.
Okay, it's good to see you, and we want to go check on George real quick. George, how are you doing in your new station down there? Things coming together in Mississippi?
Hi, Bob. Hi, Gordo. Yeah, things are coming along. I'm getting moved in. There's still a lot of boxes over here that need to be sorted out and put in their proper places. But at least I'm back on the air now on HF. I've got my ground system connected. We'll be talking about a little later in the show. And other than that, it's just been extremely hot here.
What do I see over your right shoulder? Do I see a couple of like 4400s tubes? What do we see there?
Yeah, there's about three of them back there. They're all different styles, and these are going to be sent out to have a sign made just like the one that you have there. Well, that sure yes. is fancy looking.
Look at that. It's our first time to show that from our friend Jim. Look at that beautiful thing. Gordo, have you seen that? I don't think you've seen any of this. Isn't that something?
That is terrific.
That comes. Wow. Ooh, look at that. That comes from our friend Jim.
It makes my little sign paltry. Maybe Jim will make me keep one for me, huh?
Well, I kind of think that's what the big tubes sitting behind George is all about. But anybody wants to know about those signs, you just go to Jim's Engraving, jimsengraving.com. And Jim's KF4NBG in Southern Illinois. And boy, what great work he does. That's an 833 that I had. I got the idea for this after I went to Columbus and saw the great 833 amplifiers that Jerry was building. I said, wow, I've got one of those. That's an old RCA. I've had it for years. So I sent it to Jim. Well, no, Jim came and got it. He's just that kind of guy. And isn't that great? I really love it. And, oh, it'll do all kinds of things. It'll go different colors and all that. So thanks so much, Jim. It'll be moving around the station here as I get more things together. Well, we could talk here forever about things, but I want to bring on a very special guest right at the top. You know, we talked about this, Gordon, when Dayton happened. You remember that Tom had a wreck as he left the hotel. You remember that?
Oh, I do. We were all praying for Tom, and Tom, I'm just glad you made it, buddy.
Yeah, well, let's go see what Tom's doing, how good Tom is. KB4 HQA, better known as HQA Radio. How are you, Tom?
Bob, doing good tonight, doing good. Glad to be on here, and actually glad to be moving the head around without the neck brace, finally.
Well, I know right after you had your wreck, I got on the Google Plus that you're on with some of the guys, and you were there like a day after you got home. I just couldn't believe it, but I guess it's just the radio, and if we can't let it go. And I'm sure glad that you're here and everything's good. And you might tell the audience what's going on at HQA Radio, how to find it, and what you guys do there.
Okay, well, just to give an update on actually what happened real quick. The neck, I fractured my second vertebrae, and the disc between the first and second vertebrae moved. And on my left arm, the humerus bone was snapped in three places. It's got a titanium rod and 17 screws in it right now. And the arm is doing good. I can move it. Hand, I'm still working on. The neck is fine. I could take both the braces off. And that's about the update on that. And I'm doing well, thank God.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, does that mean you're going to have to be careful going through airports where you have all this metal in you?
Well, believe it or not, when I was leaving Dayton to come home from Atlanta, I was in the wheelchair, and they said, I told the guy, I have a plate in my arm, it's probably going to go off. He goes, is it titanium? And I said, no. He goes, don't have to worry about titanium. It won't go off. So learn something new then.
That's great. Well, we're so happy that things have worked out well for you, and we'll look forward to some more programs. And let us know what's going on at HQA Radio lately. What do you got going on lately that's happening?
Well, the show itself, we kind of put it on hiatus, obviously, for a couple months. Well, actually, only about 4 weeks on the Sunday show, and then one of the shows we brought back again. But right now, we still have our Sunday live show, which we do every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern time. We have a live chat and a live video stream. We also do a recorded show called Amateur Radio Weekly, which has been every other week lately because of just getting in content and getting everything put up. And that's what we were really doing at Dayton. We were actually streaming the Contest University trek for the whole 4 days, the main day and then at nighttime when they had their couple of things there. And that's what we were doing there. And we also got a chance to get to the HamFest and come by your booth, the Ham Nation booth, and everything else. But the show's going fine, and if anybody wants to check out my Sunday show, I've had George on there, and we've got a bunch of people. It's hqaradio.com, and that's basically about it. Like I said, we try to show people, new people that want to become hams, people that are hams, and we go over just about any facet of amateur radio, and it keeps us busy.
Well, that's great. You do a great job. Really nice. And I enjoy seeing the broadcast. So everybody want to tune over and see what you're doing. That's great. Now, well, you're doing something else tonight, too. Here you are. Our old friend Dan goes to the air show in Oshkosh last week. Fill us in on what happened to Dan. And I guess you're taking over a little bit of his position tonight. And I thank you very much for that. But I'm very concerned about Dan.
Yeah, well, we were going to take care of the wiki for this show, Ham Nation, tonight, and update that. And we're going to try to do the best we can on that, and hopefully it'll get out later this evening, if not tomorrow. But Dan N9LVS does the wiki for Ham Nation, and he was at the air show in Oshkosh, and got hit with a pulmonary embolism the other morning. He lodged in his lungs, and I think a little bit of a clot got into his heart. And he's in the hospital there in Neda, Wisconsin at the moment. And it surprised the heck out of me because he called me late that night. It happened in the morning. He called me around 9 o'clock that night to let me know what was going on. And he was talking to the tech from the hospital, the IT guy, to make sure that he can get a port out so he can get on Google Plus. And he was actually going to hang out from his hospital room that night. So luckily he's doing good. He's doing good. And he's actually in the chat room right now and under N9LVS. So the hams out there that sent me cards and everything, I want you to wish him well also and keep you, you know, keep him in your minds and everything. And hopefully Dan will pull through this, which it looks like he's doing real well.
Oh, well, George, you're in that chat room every once in a while, or in the Google Plus every once in a while with Dan, and it was remarkable to see him in there. Wasn't that something, George?
It sure was. I've known Dan for several months now. I met him there on the Google Hangouts, but, you know, he does our wiki here on Ham Nation. He does the wiki for AmateurLogic.tv as well, and just a great guy. It was a lot of fun to meet him in person this year in Dayton, wasn't it, Bob?
Well, he's a fun guy. He was at AES too, and we wish you well, Dan. I know you're watching, and we do wish you well. And Tom, I thank you so much for coming on, and Gordon, you're going to have to tune into one of our Google Pluses one night and meet all these guys. And you probably remember Dan, though, from our Ham Nation booth. He was around quite a bit, Gordon.
Boy, he sure was. He was huge support of what we were doing. And, you know, people are still talking about Ham Nation at the Dayton Hamvention. And thanks to all of our supporters. Back to you, Bob.
Yeah, and thanks to your help, Tom. Well, Tom, we wish you well. Thanks for coming on. It's really great to have you. And we'll probably see you later on a hangout somewhere. And if not, we'll be certainly watching your shows. And I hope a lot of the Ham Nation audience checks you out on Sunday night, too. So thanks for being here, Tom. We're really glad that you're doing well.
No, Bob, thank you very much. And thanks for having me on. And we'll run into you. We'll see you in a hangout or somewhere, most likely at Huntsville the next time we run into you personally. So 73s.
Okay, 7-3. We're looking forward to Huntsville. That's going to be great. Well, we're going to move around and see what Julian's up to. And I know it'll have something to do with a video. So let's go check out and see what Julian's got going.
Maker Faire Kansas City is a family-friendly event to create, learn, invent, craft, think, play, and be inspired by celebrating arts and crafts, engineering, food, music, science, and technology. Maker Faire celebrates things people create themselves, from a basketball-playing robot to home-brewed recipes and Tesla coil music. With over 270 makers and over 10,000 attendees, Kansas City's Union Station was abuzz with flamethrowers, Tesla coils, quadcopters, robots, exotic cars, boffers, and most importantly, an amateur radio station. This was no regular ham radio station. Various emergency services of Kansas City came together to participate in ham radio's biggest on-the-air event, Field Day. The objective of Field Day is to make as many contacts with other operators in a 24-hour period. For every contact, points are awarded, and bonus points are given for operating in public areas, using emergency power like solar cells and generators, and allowing guests to get on the air at a GOTA station. And what better place to get on the air at the first Maker Faire Field Day? With the idea sparked by Noah Dunker, KD0NRC, and the genius of John Hoshide, W0BBQ, Bob Kimmerell, W0AO, and Brian Short, KC0BS, and the generosity of the Salvation Army and many others came a station that was nestled right in the middle of all the activity. K0C, the call sign of the station, operated three radios on three antennas, two dipoles, and a vertical, and was active on most HF bands using SSB, CW, and various digital modes. With the threat of rain, record heat, bugs, and Tesla coil bands, the operators cranked out only 563 contacts. But for almost every on-the-air contact, the station influenced 20 Maker Faire attendees. Field Day awards bonus points to stations at which any person can operate, and from that, guest operators came in large numbers at Maker Faire. As long as a licensed ham was present, Maker Faire patrons had free roam on the ham radio bands and got to learn what it was like to operate on what they believed to be an antiquated and obsolete technology. In retrospect, ham radio is far from obsolete. With the ever-present danger of disaster, ham radio stands as the world's best communications backup. When phone lines, internet, or satellite links are destroyed, nothing else can support national and international communications without infrastructure like ham radio can. But before the big one hits, hams enjoy using radios to promote international camaraderie, learn about and build electronic circuits, compete in contests, and promote the hobby to others. As the ARRL youth editor, I was very excited to see several young hams sit in the operator's chair. Sonny Fontes, an 11-year-old ham, got licensed with the help of Brian Short and hamclass.org, and got to walk around with his first handheld radio thanks to Brian. With the call sign KD0SHI, he talked with a few of the operators around Maker Faire before returning with it and upgrading to HF. Sonny is a brilliant young man. He could tell you the difference between Mylar and electrolytic capacitors, and has an interest in vacuum tubes. With Bob Kimbrell logging, he took to the operator's chair instantly and made several contacts, eyeing the regenerative receiver on display at the GOTA table the entire time. Another young man, Will Stewart, came to the operator's table. Genuine surprise came to the entire team as he patiently struggled to make his first QSO. With both RF and audio noise coming from Architect, the coil band, he discovered firsthand how difficult it can be to make contact. After several minutes, though, he finally came out on top with applause from all.
QSL. And then say 7 Alpha, Missouri.
7 Alpha, Missouri.
There you go. Yay! Congratulations.
With temperatures forecasted to break 100 degrees, Sunday saw much less outdoor activity as the Maker Faire patrons sought refuge indoors. The K0C team fought through the heat and shade, as well as in the air-conditioned trailer and Salvation Army canteen, and still had several guests as the shade and air conditioning caught passers-by. To K0C, Field Day wasn't about making points. It was about making new hams and spreading the word about amateur radio. The event was resoundingly successful for both Maker Faire and the K0C team.
That was a great piece about that Maker Faire. And have you participated in any of those locally out there, Gordon?
We have, and let me tell you, what a great place to expose ham radio and all that ham radio can do to the general public that goes, gosh, I thought you were an antiquated service. And, you know, just last night I took part in a public service event and Ray wanted me to try a new ICOM radio. Well, you know, I've got a lot of handhelds and I've got the D-Star handhelds and I got Kenwood and Yaesu and Alinco and Wushan and TET and all of the others. And Ray said, you're going to notice something about this radio. This is the ICOM 70A dual bander. And it was so loud at this concert in the park last night that I thought, I'm never going to hear this radio. This radio really puts out the audio. So if you have a need for a radio that does nice, loud audio when you're on scene, even without a headphone, this you can hear over the band, all of the noise. Back to you, Bob.
That's great. Okay, we'll take that to our loud rock concerts and tune in. Well, thanks, Julian, for putting that together with Sterling and the guys at Mid-Missouri. They really do a nice job. I know that you've been working with a lot of the video people. And if you have a video and you want to send it in and it's worthy to be on Ham Nation, please do. We're looking for videos. And you want to send them to Julian and get them to us so that we can see what you have going. And I know everybody will be interested in it. So send it along and Julian will give you a little help and guide you along, because sometimes the videos have they need a little help from Julian to guide you, his professional help, and he can do that. Gordon, what do you got today for your little short shots? I bet you got some things happening, huh?
I do. Our short shots are going to go and talk about aluminum. And every so often I hear someone say, well, I've got a bad antenna trap. And what a trap is an LC circuit. L for inductance, and you can see as I open up this trap, there's the coil. That's what provides inductance. And to create resonance, we need X of C, or capacitance. And as you see, this trap has a little slide that goes over the coil. One side is on the coil, and the other side is isolated. And what I wanted to show you was traps usually just don't go bad. What occurs either is you'll lose the little black insert right here, and it shorts out, bypassing the coil. Or sometimes little critters will build up inside the trap, and you've got to clean them out real well. Normally, at modest power levels, you're not going to arc over the coil. And if you do arc it over, you'll see. So we encourage all of you to not necessarily send back a bad trap, because it really takes a lot to burn up a trap unless you're running a KW+. So examine the traps. You can take them apart. You can pull them apart and see exactly what's going on. But in just a moment, we're going to show you usually what goes wrong with trap antennas. And in researching the aluminum field, we found a catalog that truly has everything for those of you putting together a modest antenna system. It's from DX Engineering, and you can get the catalog online as well, DX Engineering, dxengineering.com. And in this 54-page catalog, which incidentally sells ICOM equipment as well, MFJ and a lot of other manufacturers, they've got all sorts of tonic for the aluminum. Never seize and anti-seize must for stainless steel. Penetrox A for aluminum to aluminum. And they've got all of this in the catalog. And if ever you wanted to see what's happening with modest antenna systems, take a look at this catalog, because DX Engineering, a big player in antennas, and you see them every year at the Dayton Amateur Radio Convention. Well, Alex, if we've undone the computer problem, let's go ahead and go with those quick 7-second shots, and we'll do a little show and tell. You must have the MFJ or others that are similar to it, some digital SWR analyzer. This is probably the least expensive, and it's a real favorite because it allows you to check antenna resonance, check and see what the antenna feed point impedance is without having to run back and forth between the station and up on the roof. This one, MFJ, very, very worn. Here's what goes wrong with antenna traps. Not the trap, but it's that connection between the aluminum joints. When you loosen up that Allen screw or the screw that's holding the hose clamp, you're going to find that it's probably welded together. Yet if you take it an ohmmeter to it, you'll see that it's probably not making a good connection. And here's another one. When I see exposed antenna connectors without that sticky tape over them, such as coax seal from Reynoldsburg, Ohio, I'm worried that, again, do we have a good outside connection? Sometimes the inside is okay, but there's absolutely no DC connection from the outside shell of that PL or in connector to the other device. Good antennas normally have ballons, but you don't necessarily need to go out and buy an expensive ballon. You can many times make the ballon yourself, wound around a form, pull the form out, and get it all lashed up like we have here on the Innov antenna, 6-meter antenna that's working DX every day. Boy, that's a great antenna. And who would think that you could, for field day, put a big, long, almost 35-foot boom on a small tilt-up mount? But there's the van and the dune buggy that got the antenna there. We assembled it in less than an hour, and the Innov antenna is standing tall. This is my set up at the house, and it's a Cushcraft A4, and on top of that, a Cushcraft 6-element, 6-meter beam. But every so often, I was having intermittent connections. A bad trap? Nope. We take the trap apart and it's just fine. It's the connection. Hey, there's Barry Goldwater's original antenna imported from Arizona out here to Southern California. That's called a log periodic. No traps, doesn't have a huge amount of gain, but just the surface area of that log periodic antenna really demands a signal that you've got to hear out on the airwaves. That's up about 120 feet. Again, that's the inside of a trap. There you see XAVEL, the coil, and you can look at the coil and tell in a minute, even with an ohmmeter, whether or not you've got a problem. And as we see there, this coil looks absolutely pristine. There's no arc over. I would meter to make sure that each of those points on the antenna coil are making good contact. And if they are, then you do not have a trap problem. So check your traps out. Make sure you got that little black spacer in place. And yes, Cushcraft and MFJ and others can supply those parts if they are old and breaking apart, because you need that separation on one end of the trap so it forms a capacitor that is over the antenna coil. And finally, looking at this, you can, if they pull apart, clean them up with steel wool and use some of that Penetrox A and then tighten that clamp down, wiggle it back and forth, and you will have cured what you thought was a dead trap to now a good antenna connection. So during the summertime, a good time to work on your antenna, but remember, stay away from power lines, because we want you around to do more work on your antenna system. And remember, the traps don't go bad. It's just you need to put them together tightly. And here we are down at the beach playing HF on 6 meters. That would actually be VHF on 6 meters and HF on 10 meters. And just a little modest antenna like this, and you can literally work thousands of miles away. So thanks for watching these 7-second shots. Alex, good job. And Bob, back to you, because I'm going to go look for more bad antenna traps that I know really aren't bad. Bob?
And we just lost Bob.
Okay. Let's see. Well, if we lost Bob, let me go over to George. And George, what have you found out about metering antenna traps? And have you ever seen, George, a trap that actually arced over? Go ahead, George.
I have not seen any ham traps that arced over. I don't have any antennas that use them myself. But, boy, I've seen a lot of coils arc over before in broadcast transmitters. And lightning will do a number on those things, too. But it's a good topic that you covered there, Gordo. And, yeah, metering. What should you read across that coil in there? It's got to be very low resistance.
You bet, George. I usually see about 1 or 2 ohms. But, you know, I did get a trap on a brand-new antenna where the rivet did not actually contact the actual copper of the coil, and it looked like it was making a great connection. It was wide open. So that one went back to the manufacturer, and they got it squared away real quick. Well, let's go ahead and maybe, Alex, tune in to Don Wilbanks and see what Don's got. I think he's live tonight, and Don's got some exciting news about some wonderful band conditions that sprung up due to all the hot weather you have back there in the Midwest and East Coast. So, Alex, if you'll bring Don aboard. Don Wilbanks, over to you.
Hey, Gordo, George, everybody else. Bob, good to see you guys tonight. Yeah, from Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1823, here are your Ham Nation headlines for July 25th, 2012. Some breaking news, as mentioned, on a huge VHF band opening. My friend Kevin Duplantis, W4KEV, formerly of New Orleans, now a broadcast engineer in Knoxville, Tennessee, was tuning around the FM broadcast band yesterday, July 24th, when he stopped on WRJK 106.7 in Knoxville. He heard a commercial that seemed a little bit out of place. Then the station ID'd as 106.7 The Wizard, Burlington, Vermont. Now, since WRJK wow. is typically a religious station, he knew something was up. So after a number of fades, the Vermont station came back strong, totally wiping out the local Knoxville station only 15 miles away. So Kevin ran inside knowing something big was going on. He made a ton of contacts on 2 meters in the northeast and southeast Canada, some over 1,000 miles away. He had some stations try on 220. That band was also open. He said the E-layer opening lasted for about 30 minutes. He also heard the Canadians making contact with the lower parts of Alabama and Mississippi down in my neck of the woods. Now, as we know, on 6 meters, that's not that big of a deal. But on 2 meters and 220, it's a huge thing. 2 meter reflectors were buzzing during the frenzy. Even some local Knoxville broadcast engineers had never witnessed their local FM stations being obliterated by other broadcasters over 1,000 miles away. And he says they don't get many tropo openings up there in the Tennessee area, so this was a huge thrill, to say the least. In other news, 3 ham radio space flyers arrived safely at the International Space Station early Tuesday, July 17th, for a 4-month stay, bringing the orbiting outpost back to its full crew complement of 6. The Soyuz space capsule carrying NASA astronaut Sunita Williams, KD5PLB, Russian cosmonaut Yuri Melanchenko, RK3DUP, and Japanese space explorer Aki Hoshide, KE5DNI, docked with the station at 12:51 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Tuesday, July 17th, following a 2-day flight from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. And coincidentally, this latest group of crew members arrived at the International Space Station exactly 37 years to the day after the world's first truly international spacecraft meeting took place on orbit. That was the docking of a NASA Apollo spacecraft and a Russian Soyuz 19 capsule during the Apollo-Soyuz test project way back in 1975. Many believe that's what laid the groundwork that led to the International Space Station that's on orbit today. As part of the celebration of the 2012 London Olympics and Paralympics, 2 flagship amateur radio stations will be active during the Games. The Cray Valley Radio Society will host England's Olympic celebration from the Royal Borough of Greenwich. That's home to many of London's events outside the main Olympic arena. The call sign used at that location will be 2Oscar12Lima. A similar amateur radio celebration is happening in Barry, South Wales, where the call sign there is 2Oscar12Whiskey. Both groups are looking to make as many contacts as possible during worldwide. During the Olympics, they'll be on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. From Wednesday, July 25th, today, through Sunday, September 9th, the London station will be open to the public if you're out there from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The Welsh station from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day, and both of those are local London times. Commemorative QSLs will be available for both operations. QSL information is online at 2Oscar12Lima.com and 2Oscar12Whiskey.com. And both stations say they hope to contact you on the air. And finally, we close tonight with some sad news. As the changing of the guard continues in amateur radio, famed writer Walt Maxwell, W2DU, passed away July 3rd at his home in DeLand, Florida. Walt Maxwell was best known in the amateur radio circles for his groundbreaking articles, Another Look at Reflections. These were published in QST magazine in a 7-part series from 1973 to 1976 and explained in plain English concepts such as line loss, SWR, balance, and antenna tuners. The articles were later compiled into a book titled Reflections, Transmission Lines and Antennas, and that included additional materials on matching networks, antennas, and the Smith chart. More details on the life and work of W2DU Walt Maxwell are available on his website. That's W2DU.com. And Walt Maxwell was 93 years old. And a good friend of yours, Gordo, Hawaii's weak signal legend Paul Leeb, KH6HME, has also become a silent key. Paul Leeb maintained 4 VHF and UHF propagation beacons atop the Mauna Loa volcano, which were regularly received along the U.S. West Coast, and it was never unusual for KH6HME to make the 3-hour drive to the 8,200-foot site of the beacons to maintain them and even get on the air himself to be a bit of rare VHF and UHF DX. And as we go to air, funeral arrangements for Paul Leeb, KH6HME, were pending. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the friends and families of both of these amateur radio legends. They will be missed. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, down in South Mississippi, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Back to you, Gordo.
All right. Well, thanks, John. And, you know, Paul was a tremendous signal via tropospheric ducting. And to show you how strong that tropo duct between here and Hawaii is, take a listen. That's Paul. So Paul will certainly be missed, and wow, he certainly had a signal over here. Right now they're working out as to the continuation of this great beacon operation in Hawaii. Well, let's see if we can go over to Bob now, because I know Bob's got some exciting news to tell us. So Bob, over to you. K9EID, go ahead.
Hey, I have
I have reflections. I always loved it when he would come by and spend time. Walt Maxwell was something. He'd come by the Dayton booth, and I'd just be mesmerized because he was wonderful. And all of this information, I hasten every one of you, licensed for a long time or new, get this book. It's really great, Reflections. And Maxwell was something. As I said, he comes by the booth, and he'd just bring you lots of knowledge and great friendship. He was really great. So sorry to miss him. And Paul is going to be really missed. And I know that's going to put a kink in that part of it out there. Well, we continue history in this hobby. And the history this week is really culminating a whole bunch of activity in the past few years with the Collins Radio Group in Cedar Rapids and in Richardson, Texas. They've been working real hard to restore the HF transmitters that were aboard B-29 airplanes. And they've got a set that they did. And they put it in Fifi, the only flying remaining B-29. It was restored in full. And the other day in 40 meters, here was Lonnie Duncan, one of my great friends. They were flying it from Texas to Cedar Rapids, and I just happened to catch it. And we're going to show you some pictures and play you some video, or play you some audio from that. So let's start the slides and see what happens.
All right, Bob's still looking. We're filling 100 years of ham radio licensing on August 17th. That's a Friday. So I want everybody in the chat room to go out there and bake the biggest birthday cake and give us video of that. 100 years of licensing this coming August 17th. Here's Bob.
Well, I had a power surge here. It took me off, and it messed up all the memories in the recorder. So, we're going to come back with this in August when the airplane comes to Springfield. We're going to have some real good stuff. But I want all of you to listen on. It's going to be around 7203. It's crystal controlled, and you'll get to hear N0A B-29. So you want to go check it out when it comes through your town, because it's just amazing to be able to work the only flying B-29. And there's quite a history, and you want to go check out that website that I give you and see what's going on, because it's truly history. And it's history of what our parents and grandparents went through for World War II to save this country, let me tell you. So we'll have some more on future weeks with some of the stuff from the guys at Collins Radio and, of course, the only flying B-29, Fifi. So sorry the old power crash came and everything went nuts there, but we'll get it going for you. And George, let me see what's going on down there. But I tell you what, get her ready to go, because I want to do one other thing before we go. I think Alex has got this video. I got a real short video about RF gain. You know, we talk a lot about all these radios and what they do, and a lot of people really don't know, many of us that's been around for a while. But RF gain is very, very important. Most of us just crank it wide open, and it gets real noisy, and you figure, well, if I turn it down, I won't hear anybody. Check this out. Roll that video, please, Alex. It's wide open.
I just gained sure stuff for Archer's Prize. That's it.
You notice how noisy it is.
No, I had no idea what they were worth.
But they're 30 over 9. Now watch.
I'm not going to sit here and research to see how much it is. It's just what the guy said he wanted to insurance for, and that's what it is.
Mark 5 or Mark 5?
The noise, right?
Mark 5 for you.
Yeah, somewhere around 13.
That's long, Deloitte.
It's almost listen to FM. There's nothing in between the stations, and that's why you adjust your RF gain if you leave it wide open. As you heard, these guys were 30 over 9. So where'd all the noise come from? The RF gain was wide open. So, and of course, if you crank it down too far, if you have a weak station, yeah, you probably won't hear him. So you have to adjust the threshold as to where the signals and the noise are kind of like in between each other. But I constantly am rocking that RF gain back and forth, especially on the lower frequencies, because you can get rid of that noise, and you heard what happened. It cleans right up. It almost sounds like they're on FM. I know you know all about that, don't you, George? Because you and I talk on 75 a lot, and I bet you got a big crank on your RF gain control, don't you?
I sure do, Bob. Yeah. And you'll probably see where the paint is worn around the knob there a little bit. It's been turned so much. But, yeah, you know, you would think RF gain, you should run it wide open for the most, but that's not the case. Turn it back to the least you can get away with, and then you get rid of all that noise. So that's the way to go, Bob.
Absolutely. Gordon, what you work a lot of VHF stuff. It's really important on VHF, isn't it?
It really is, and because I don't always have great signal strengths, I'm just the opposite. I always leave it wide open so I can hear even the slightest amount of signal.
That's right. It depends on what the signal strength is and what you're listening for. That's the whole deal. But on the low frequencies, you really have to make sure that you want to get rid of all that noise. So, George, what are we going to do? Are we grounding your new station properly, or what's happening there?
We're grounding it tonight, Bob. You know, I've been moving in the new shack here and getting things set up. And I've been off HF, you know, for several weeks. And so this week, the top of the schedule said, get in there and get everything grounded so you can get the HF rigs and the amplifiers back on. So let's take a look here at this video that I shot of my grounding system.
This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to talk about ground systems. Now, if you ask 100 different hams what's a good ground system, well, of course you'll get 100 different answers. We can't cover everything there is to know about it, so we'll take a look at a few basics, and then I'll show you how I'm doing my ground system here at the new shack. A ground system provides four primary functions. It can help dissipate or divert energy from a lightning strike. It provides safety in case there's some problem or fault that energizes a cabinet or a chassis of the equipment with dangerous voltages. It provides a controlled RF return path for in-fed or poorly configured or improperly designed transmission line-fed antennas. It provides a highly conductive path for induced or directly coupled radio frequency currents rather than have them flow in lossy soil. And it can also help prevent RFI in your ham shack. According to Jerry Buston, KR7KZ, the author of Constructing HF Wire Antennas, a good ground system is paramount and the way to improve your system over neighboring hams. A single ground rod placed outside your shack is inadequate. If you have no other choice, though, then do it. However, it's 10 times better than a water faucet. Your ground strap or braid out to your first ground rod should be as short as possible. No matter what your situation is, make your ground strap as short as possible and without any coils in your braid. Your ground strap should be at least 1/2 or 1 inch copper, and if possible, use at least one or more ground rods spaced 6 to 8 feet apart. Connect all the rods together. The more rods you have, the better. You can place a copper wire mesh grounded grid if you like. Jerry also suggests that you search the web for RF grounding systems for more information. Now, here's my new ground system. It all starts at the ground where I have an 8-foot copper ground rod. I may add more in the future. That connects to a 1.5-inch copper strap that I got from Georgia Copper. And you can see this is a metal building, so I put 3 screws through there to ground the system to the building itself. To get the strap inside the building, I decided to cut a slot in the wall and just feed it through there. The slot's just above the 2x4 at the bottom of the wall. Now, I decided to do that rather than try to curl this up and run it through the conduit that my antenna cable comes in through. Now, I'm fortunate enough to have obtained for free a 7-foot metal rack to mount my ham gear in. I started by connecting the copper strap at the bottom of the rack. The strap runs from the bottom to the top of the rack. You can see where I punched two holes every so often to give me a place to tie in ground straps to go over to my individual pieces of gear. I also connected it to the rack cross members as I went up. Here's a shot of one of the pieces of copper strap that I bonded to the main strap to run over to my amplifier. This shot is from the inside of the rack, and it shows the strap that runs to the rear of my tuner. I connected short pieces of copper strap from the main strap to each piece of high-power RF gear in the rack. For the audio gear and smaller gear, I chose to use RG58 coax braid instead. When I do this, I like to leave the insulation from the cable over the braid. The way I do that is I'll just strip back some of the insulation from the outside of either end, being careful not to cut through and break the braid in the process. After I've done both ends of the wire, I'll push the braid back, then take a pair of pliers, grab the center conductor, and pull it out. And then that leaves me with a piece of braid that has insulation over it and then bare ends on either end of the cable. So there you have it, the W5JDX ground system. I would call this a minimal ground since I only have a single copper rod. I am considering, though, using Jerry's method of placing five in the ground and using copper radials to connect them together. Now, depending on what type of antennas you're using, you may require a much more substantial ground system at your shack. Well, that's the latest here on the shack update and what's been done. If you'd like to see more of what I've done here recently in the new ham shack, check out the last amateurlogic.tv we released this past weekend. I show a little more detail on how things are laid out in here and some of the unique things that I did to kind of tailor it to my use here. And next week, I have no idea what we'll be doing, but right now I think we're going to give away something, Bob.
Yeah, I think that's time. We need to bring the contest up here and see, first of all, who won last week and what are you going to give away this week?
Okay, last week we said we were going to give away this soldering practice kit from our good friend Frank at cheapham.com. Thanks for the gifts, Frank. They've been great. We're getting a lot of response from our viewers out there. And our question was, what is a Goonie bird? Now, we had a lot of folks try to describe a particular type of bird. That's not the answer we were looking for. And some others started describing aircraft, and that's not the answer we were looking for either. But Al, KB3KNW, got the answer correct. He says, this is a transceiver produced by the Gonset Radio Company in Burbank, California, years ago. So congratulations, Al. You won the soldering practice kit here from cheapham.com. And next week, we've got a nice little prize we're going to give away here from our friends Martin Jew and Richard and everyone at MFJ Enterprises. This is a little AC voltage monitor, and it's handy. You know, stick one of these in the wall socket there, and you can tell what kind of line voltage you're running. I've been doing that in here with this one, and I run 120 volts most of the time, but I have seen it drop below that when everyone's air conditioner in the neighborhood kicks on. If you'd like to win this, then we want to know what the RG stands for in coax, you know, like RG8, RG58. What does that RG stand for? If you think you know the answer, send an email to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And you could be next week's lucky winner. Bob?
Wow. Turn that around. Let me see that again. And for all those of you listening on the podcast, you need to check this out. Turn it around. That plugs into the wall, I guess, and you can monitor it that way. There's a plug. Oh, that's really cool. I've never seen it. You got one of those, Gordo? You have anything like that?
No. RG. Really good. Really good coax. RG.
Okay. Yeah, that monitor is super. And I'll have to check into that. That's great. I usually use it with the Simpson 260 sitting back here over my shoulder. Stick a couple of probes in the wall. But be kind of nice to have a regular monitor to see exactly what the voltage is, because sometimes this voltage gets up to be like 130 volts today, and it's really tough on some of these, especially the big amplifiers it takes to transformers, right, George?
It sure is. And you know, I look at the plate voltage on my amplifier from time to time, and some days it's a little higher, some days it's a little lower. And if you use one of these right here, you can quickly tell why, and that's because your line voltage is changing.
Yeah. Okay. Super. All right. So I will look forward to next week. Really good, Gordon, I don't think is the answer.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll keep thinking.
Oh, gosh. Okay, George, everything else there? We can shut the door on the new station so you can go get on 40 meters, right, or 75 or 20 and see what the nets are doing, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to try them all tonight because I haven't been able to get on any of the nets for the last few weeks. So yeah, we're going to try 40 to start with, and we'll probably move to 20 and 80. We'll even get on D-Star tonight and probably Echolink. I'll have to use the iPhone for the Echolink, but don't tell anyone. They won't know.
Okay. And one thing that we must say is Amanda's not with us tonight because her and Jeff are at a very special meeting with the ARES and other the emergency groups that they worked with during the fires, and she'll be back to report some of that next week. But they really did a lot of work out there, and we appreciate her and Jeff doing that. And Ham Radio played a huge part in those fires, so she is not going to be here. But I think we'll switch up to Northern Illinois, and let's go see what some of the chat room is doing tonight. Cheryl, how are you doing? Everything okay up there?
Hey, hi, Bob. I am doing just great. I hope you are, too. Welcome, everybody, to tonight's chat room of Ham Nation. Looks like we have a question for Bob to start out with. I have Chuck NK9I. He said, asked Bob if you will be attending this year's, it looks like it's the W9DXCC in September. Is that something you might be going to this year, Bob?
No, I'd love to be there, but I don't think we'll be able to make that. It's getting really tight for the beginning of the fall, into the summer. But we won't be there. But I know they have a great thing there, and all the DXers in Midwest Illinois meet there in Chicago. And sorry, won't be able to be there.
And another one, Bob. Some M3XYP suggested. How about an app for Ham Nation for the Android or the Apple? They sort of wanted that to be on their iPhones or whichever smartphone. I'm not suggesting a certain brand by any means, but that was something. Is that something that you're looking at in the future at all?
I am not, because I don't get into the Android stuff, but there's a lot of very interesting people at Twit that do some of that. We'll have to check into that and see if some of those guys and gals have come up with some of those apps. But at this point, I don't have an answer for that one.
Very good. And Gordo, can we move over to you? Someone asked in the chat room for you, how was the turnout at the HRO Anaheim last Saturday? I guess there was a ham jam there that you might have been at, correct?
It was, and it was a great show. We had about 12 different emergency response groups in the parking lot. And you know, the best part, beside them coming together and sharing all of their emergency grab-and-go equipment, was the fact that each group, except for one, made it a point to meet with the other group and talk about what they do and what they have in common. And that helps strengthen the amateur radio service when we have these groups coming together. And speaking of New York, which has nothing to do with your question, yes, I'll be back there for the Radio Club of America Awards. I'm getting one of the awards. But most important, I'll be there for the Macy's Parade. And I hope they need a communicator, because I'll bring my radio along. And then the KJI Open House in New Jersey. Back to you, Cheryl.
Thanks, Gordo. Excellent. Also, George, moving on to you, I have some questions for you. First off, I wanted to say wonderful job on the W5JDX grounding system that we all awaited for so eagerly. Anyhow, We have Jim, K5ND. He wanted to know, does the length of a ground rod, does that actually make a difference in the system?
Makes a big difference. You probably want an 8-foot ground rod. That's the most typical ones. You can see some around, you know, maybe 3 or 4 feet from some of the television antenna suppliers. You want something a little longer than that. 8 foot's good. 10 foot's good. And the more the merrier. You know, the more copper or metal you can put in the ground, the better off you are usually.
Great, great. And also for you, George, we have WB5CCO. Rick wanted to know, how did you bond the strap to the ground rod? You didn't solder, did you? He asked.
Yes, I did solder. And I used a propane torch. It's not within reach here, but you know what I'm talking about, that thing that Jim waves around all the time. I used one with MAP gas in it because it gets a little hotter, and you really have to heat up that copper rod when it's stuck down in the ground to get it hot enough to solder. And then I put a little solder flux paste on it. Helped, you know, after I'd cleaned it up with some steel wool, the solder flux helped kind of get it flowing. Then I tinned it real good with some silver solder. And then I tinned the copper strap with silver solder, wrapped it around there, and then heated the whole thing together. And it's got a good tight bond.
Excellent, excellent. Because NM1W, Jim, he said, I fear your buddy Jim was out there with a welder trying to get that done. So that was the last question I have for you so far, but I wanted to invite everybody to stop in at 3.847 megahertz on 75 meters tonight, and we can talk and take your call, and we'd be happy to talk to you tonight. And thanks, everyone, for your answers to the questions tonight, and we'll see you next week on Ham Nation.
Okay, Cheryl, thanks a lot. And the chat room's always a lot of fun. Be sure and check in. And you can do that very easily. I just go to IRC, and it's right there. It's already on the bottom of when you tune into Ham Nation. You can scroll down and check in usually. But be sure you check in with it. It's just twit.irc. Twit.irc will get you there also, and you can join in the fun. Well, that's going to wrap it up, I think, for tonight. Sorry you had a few technical problems here, but my little power surge and all other things. We'll come back with those pictures next week about the B-29. It's such a historic event, and we want to present that right to you, let you hear that, what's going on. Gordo, everything going to shut down, and you're going to move over to what, 7268 or 14268?
I am there right now. In fact, they're probably listening. Hello, Net Controls.
Whiskey Tango 6 Hotel, 40 meters.
Yeah, there he is.
He is there, so he's waiting for us, so we hope to meet everybody on 7268. 14268, and meet you down on Cheryl's frequency on 75 meter as well. Bob, back to you, and great to see you all on Ham Nation.
Good enough. George, greetings to you, and we'll see you tonight somewhere, I betcha, and his station's looking really good, George. Glad you can be here with us tonight.
Thanks, Bob, and yeah, I'm looking forward to getting on the nets and talking with everyone tonight. I did want to make a comment earlier about that Maker Faire video. You know, we don't have a formal Maker Faire here in Mississippi. However, Tommy comes over occasionally, and we have our own little Maker Faire here. And Jim shows up, and we have a Burning Man festival.
Yeah, I bet you do. Let's video that sometime and play that one. Well, boy. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week right here on Wednesday night on the Twit Network. Thank you to Leo Laporte for the bandwidth and all of the production facilities and people that take care of this back in Petaluma. And we'll go get on the radio and talk to all of you. If you want to catch us on the nets, give us a jingle on the old computer. Our emails are all real accessible.
Man, I think Bob must have just dropped out on us, so Echo Link is a star do drop in star node number 355800, D star reflector 14 module C. And we didn't mention Cheryl's net on 80 meters. That's on 3.850 megahertz. So
or 3.847.
Say again, Cheryl.
3.847 tonight, so we have a little bit more of an open band there at this time.
Okay. Good. Glad you corrected me on that. That's a good frequency. I talk with those guys a lot.
Excellent. Yeah, they're real nice.
Say goodnight.
Good night.
Good night, Alex.
All of our guests and Bob, who's going through power surges, we wish you all a very 73. And hey, I'm going to meet you on 7268. There's someone tuning up now. 73 from the gang at Ham Nation.